Once again, your presence is indicative of your interest in things divine, and we're glad to have you, as Harold said in the announcements. I want to extend my sincere condolences to the family of Sister Earlene Harris and her loss. Earlene struggled to come to church, but I'd see her come through the door over here many times, and she did make it as long as she possibly could. She did a lot of good in her life. She had a difficult life, but she helped a lot of people. And, of course, we will miss Sister Harris and should be willing to do anything we can for the family in this hour of adversity. I mentioned last week that I had contacted a young preacher by the name of Mitch Stevens from Memphis, Tennessee. I've known Mitch for some time. I've never heard him preach, but Mitch is 30 years old, and he has a wife and two children, two boys, I believe. And Mitch will be with us Sunday after next on October the 31st, which is, I believe, Sunday after next. He'll be speaking here at all of the services. We want to get acquainted with him. And although I've never heard Mitch speak, I did work with him in a meeting over in the Memphis area at Cordovia, where he preaches. And we'll look forward to hearing him at that time. I hope that you will tell everyone, your friends and neighbors and the brethren and everyone, so that we'll be present here on the 31st to hear Mitch preach for us. We'll look forward to that. I want to speak for a while today upon a subject I've never used before, but I believe it's important. I call it Two Frightened Men. You know, in the reading of the non-conversion of Felix, it is said when Felix heard the gospel, the New King James says he was afraid. The King James Version says that he trembled, but one translation said he was afraid. You know, we can become afraid or frightened by a number of things in life. We can become frightened because we want to preserve this physical body. And anything that is a challenge to that usually frightens us. We can be frightened by dozens of things. An animal which might devour us. Common sense teaches we'd be frightened by that animal. At least I would, and I think you would too. We could be frightened by an automobile accident where we just barely escaped. We would call it a wake-up call. You could be frightened by going into a doctor's office, and if he told you you had a coronary thrombosis or cancer of the liver or some fatal disease, that's a wake-up call, and that would frighten you, at least normal people. And so there are a number of things which frighten us in this world, and we have to confess that. Sometimes we are frightened, and our pride keeps us from admitting that we're frightened. I've heard children say, when some other child tried to scare them, say, "You didn't scare me." Well, maybe they really scared them, but they didn't want to admit it. But they were really scared. And so the story goes on and on. And another thing we could be frightened by is by something spiritual out of the Bible, where a preacher preaches a hellfire sermon, which I mentioned last week, and very vividly spells out for us that in hell there'll be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. And people are cast into outer darkness, and where all of this will take place. And when we listen to that, we know what weeping, wailing is and gnashing of teeth. And we think, well, I don't want to go there. I don't want to spend eternity there. Therefore, this frightens us. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Now, that's why I delivered a couple of lessons last week on hellfire sermons. I think we need to be woke up to what is going to take place if we don't serve God. I think a lot of us have gone to sleep. We're lethargic. And we have become so interwoven with the society in which we live and the pleasures of this life and having a good time that we don't want to think about death. We don't want to think about judgment. And we don't want to think about eternity. But that doesn't change it. It's still coming. And it may be closer than we realize. So we need to think about it now, and this is a place of preparation. But I want to discuss for you a couple of frightened men and their reaction in the Bible. The first one is mentioned over in Acts, the 16th chapter, and it has to do with the Philippian jailer. You know, in Acts 16, verse 9, Paul received what is commonly called the Macedonian call. He saw in a vision this man saying, come over into Macedonia and help us. He crossed the Aegean Sea and went down through the cities there before, I believe one of them was Neapolis, another Samothracia, and finally he came into Philippi, the chief city of Macedonia. And when Paul arrived in Philippi, one of the first things he thought about is, how could I convert somebody here? How could I save a soul? Which we need to all think about that. Is there any way that I could save anybody? Is there anyone I could talk to? He learned that a group of women were meeting down by the riverside for prayer meeting service. The head woman was Lydia, a seller of purple from the city of Thyatira. And evidently her colleagues met with her down there, and they had a prayer meeting service. And as indicated in the text, they still believed they were under the old law. That is, they believed that they were under the law of Moses. Therefore, they were worshiping God in that respect. And Paul felt that he might do some good down there. He didn't know for sure, but he went down there and met with these women and found that they were religious people and meeting. And Paul, of course, preached to them. And the Bible said the Lord opened Lydia's heart. Now, the heart is up here, not down here. This is what he opened up. He opened up her heart, and she attended unto the things spoken by Paul. She and her household were baptized. Now, the question is, how was her heart opened or her mind opened? Well, it was opened by the preaching of the gospel. Paul explained to her that she was not under the old law or the Decalogue, that she was under the last will and testament of Jesus Christ, and that she needed to be baptized for the remission of sins. And after he had expounded this and explained this to Lydia, although Luke doesn't give us the entire sermon, she attended to it. She was an honest woman. But she was like Paul. She was mistaken at this time in her religion. But she didn't know it. She's honest. And so Paul more or less hit the jackpot here in that he baptized this whole household, and this formed the nucleus of the church in Philippi, which later became a very good congregation and supported Paul in his preaching. Well, after this happened and he converted Lydia, he went back uptown. And as he was traveling around trying to find other opportunities to preach, there was a teenage girl following him around. She was possessed with a demon. And she would follow Paul and Silas around and said, "These men are the servants of the Most High God who show us the way of salvation." And as Paul went around, this girl was everywhere he went. There she was. I guess she walked behind him. I don't know. And she'd say, "These men are the servants of the Most High God who show us the way of salvation." Well, that's true. They were the servants of the Most High God. And they were showing the way of salvation. And even that demon within the girl spoke the truth about that. But in connection with that, some of the men of the city were using her as a fortune teller and making good money, this teenage girl. And Paul evidently was afraid that his preaching would be identified with a soothsaying maiden. And he decided that he'd better cast the demon out of her. So he turned to her and cast that demon out of the damsel. Well, when he did that, that upset her owners because she could no longer tell fortunes, and therefore it got into their pocketbook. And they say the most sensitive nerve in a man's body leads to his pocketbook. It is said in elections, people vote their pocketbook. We're coming up in election here in a couple of weeks. And they say most people in America vote their pocketbook. I think you know what that means. Well, these men didn't like what Paul did. So they went before the magistrates of the city officials, and said, "These men are troublemakers, and they're causing a lot of trouble, and they should be incarcerated." So they had enough political clout that Paul and Silas were arrested and beaten and whipped with a whip and cast into the inner prison. That's unfortunate, but that happened. And they were placed in the jailhouse, and along with all of the other prisoners, into what the Bible calls the inner prison. I believe the inner prison was the prison where the most severe criminals were kept. That is, the ones who were a threat to society. They usually bound their feet in stocks. As a matter of fact, I know that's what they did to Paul and Silas. They put their feet in stocks, which is in chains, probably tied to the floor, so they couldn't get out. And so while Paul and Silas, these two preachers, are in Philippi, after he'd received the Macedonian call, he and Silas, at midnight, started a gospel meeting in the jailhouse. And the Bible says they prayed and sang praises unto God. Well, that's good. That's what we've done this morning, isn't it? Haven't we prayed? Well, I hope everybody prayed. As Brother Tom led us, we prayed. And we've also have sung these hymns of songs of praise. So we did what Paul and Silas did 2,000 years ago. They did it in a jailhouse. And they sang praises unto God, and the Bible said the prisoners heard them. Someone says, how many prisoners were in jail with them? I don't know, but probably quite a few. I don't know how many were there. But the Bible said the prisoners heard them. But the good thing about it is God heard them. Now, it wasn't too important that the prisoners hear them as they praised God. But the good thing about it is God heard them. Now, I hope that God heard us as we sang and as we prayed today. Just like Paul and Silas. 2,000 years ago. And if it's good enough for Paul and Silas, it's good enough for me. As the old song says, you remember? Good enough for Paul and Silas, good enough for me. I was talking to a man one time, and he was talking about instrumental music, and I said, well, the truth about the matter is, all God tells us to do is sing. And I said, when Paul and Silas were in prison, I said, they didn't have an instrument, they prayed and sang. Well, he said, they might have had a piano in the jailhouse. I said, well, even if they'd have had one, they couldn't have gotten to it. He said, why? I said, their feet were locked in stocks. They couldn't have got over there where the piano was, even if there'd been a piano there. And I said, it's an assumption that there was a piano in the jailhouse. The truth about the matter is, all they did is prayed and sang. And I said, that's all we do in the church. We sing. We sing because that's what God authorized. He had no answer to that. But the truth about the matter is, that's what Paul and Silas did in the jailhouse 2,000 years ago, and God heard them, and God decided to perform a miracle and just open up the jailhouse. And every man's bands were loosed. That is, those chains which were on their feet just came loose. Just came loose. Miraculously. God sent an earthquake. Shook the foundation of the prison. And the jailer, there was always one man in charge of the jail, known as the jailer. And I don't know where he was at the time the earthquake hit. But when he was aroused out of his sleep, now this happened at midnight, and when he was aroused out of his lethargy and looked and saw the doors of the prison open, he just assumed that all the prisoners were gone. He thought a first-class jailbreak had been accomplished. And under Roman law, if a jailer allowed an escape, he paid with his own life. It's a death penalty for him. And he knew that's what was going to happen. That scared him. He was my first frightened man. He was a frightened man. He was so scared that he decided to commit suicide. And when you get someone in that state of mind, they are scared. He decided that it would be more expedient for him to take his own life than for Caesar to take it. So he took it out his sword and was going to commit suicide. But Paul intercepted his attempt and said, "Do thyself no harm, for we're all here." And those were wonderful words to this scared man. Two frightened men. The Philippian jailer. Oh, he was scared. He had a wake-up call. There's no doubt about that. When you come that close to dying, you've had a wake-up call. Some people pay attention to a wake-up call and get right with God, and others ignore them. They'll meet God unprepared. But when Paul said, "Do thyself," he came in and was so humble that he fell down before Paul and Silas in humility and said, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" He wanted to be saved. What must I do? One of the greatest questions in the Bible. Someone says, "Well, preacher, probably a few hours before that, was he the one that used the whiplash on their back?" Probably. That's probably his job. It was customary to whip a man before you put him in prison back in those days. They stripped their clothes to the waist and used a leather-like whip. Some people have told me that they put little pieces of metal in it so that it would cut the flesh as the jailer used it on their back. Paul and Silas' back were bleeding at this time when they started this meeting in the jailhouse. And he said, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" He was a frightened man. And Paul told him to believe on the Lord with all of his house, and he'd be saved. Took them the same hour of the night, washed their stripes, that is, their backs bleeding, washed their stripes, and was baptized, he and all his straightway. He was baptized the same hour. Not a case of delayed baptism in the Bible. Always, immediately, the same hour. Because baptism is for the remission of sins, and it is important. It's not the only thing you have to do to be saved, but it is important, and therefore it wasn't procrastinated. It wasn't put off. I was talking to a preacher one time in a denominational church. He said, "We're going to have a baptism next week." He said, "We have about 20 people to baptize." He says, "We've saved them up for a whole year." And says, "We're going to baptize them." He said, "We've saved them for a year." That church didn't believe baptism was essential. They didn't save up people back in Bible time for a year before they baptized. Took them the same hour of the night and was baptized. And all of the cases of the Bible, Lydia was baptized immediately. And all of your cases, because baptism is indispensable with salvation from sin. And so this scared man, this frightened man, obeyed the gospel and became a part of that church in Philippi, which was good to Paul later on. And it is wonderful that he responded in this way. Frightened man number two, Felix the governor. Now I said that I was going to talk about two frightened men. We've got one down and one to go. Did you know that Felix was the household slave of Agrippa, the mother of Claudius Caesar? In the days of the Roman Empire, about half of the world made up slavery. About half of the people were slaves. Believe it or not, they were. And this boy was the household slave of Agrippa, the mother of Claudius Caesar, the reigning Caesar. But he was also the son of one of his mistresses. And Claudius liked him. Now, Caesar was the head honcho in those days. He was the main man. He ruled everything. He decided that he liked this boy. He was 19 years old. And he decided that he'd put him in a governmental position, which he did at first. And then later, he transferred him to make him governor or procurator of Judea, a rather unique place for a heathen boy to occupy, ruling over God's former people, the Jews. But he selected him, and according to historians, Josephus mentions Felix, the Jewish historian, and he says that one of the things that Claudius Caesar liked about Felix is that he had driven a band of robbers out of the mountains in Galilee and had ridded the country of these robbers. And he'd done a good job, and so Claudius had him appointed as governor. But he's only 19 years old, very young. He's unmarried, single boy. And after he became governor of Judea, he was traveling around, and he met this woman, Drusilla, who was a Jewess. She was older than he was by several years, but she's beautiful. And he was fascinated by her, intrigued by her. As a matter of fact, he wanted her as his wife. She was married to King Azias, king of Amesia, a little insignificant kingdom beyond the Jordan River. So Drusilla was a married woman. But Felix found her, and he was so infatuated by her that he hired a sorcerer to talk to her and see if he could talk her out of leaving her husband and coming over and be his wife. So the sorcerer went to work, and he went down and talked to Drusilla, and she was of the Herod family, ambitious. The Herod family was a wicked family. Herod the Great, you remember, killed the babies in the days of Jesus. And then Herod Agrippa was the one who killed James, the brother of John, with a sword in Acts 12. And then there's another Herod who beheaded John the Baptist, one of his sons. She was from a wicked family. But she's a beautiful woman. And she said, yeah, I'll go over. Said, he's got a prominent position. He's governor of a big country. So she came over and married Felix, the young man. They were living, of course, in Caesarea. And Paul, of course, was brought up there as a prisoner. And one day, for some reason, he decided that he wanted to hear Paul preach. And some commentators feel that it was due to his wife, because she was a Jewess and knew about the Christian religion, and she knew a lot more than Felix as a heathen. Felix, of course, was brought up in a very vice atmosphere, a lot of ungodliness. He didn't have any training. He certainly was a church-going man. Probably never been to church in his life, as we say. He just wasn't spiritual-minded. All he thought about is gratifying his flesh, something worldly. Just like we have a lot of people in America, all they think about is something worldly. Lying, stealing, gambling, adulteries, fornication, lewdness, lasciviousness. That's all they think about. That's all that's on their mind. And that's probably about all that's on Felix's mind. He certainly wasn't what we call a church-going man. You know, it is said that when Queen Victoria was Queen of England, that Charles Spurgeon, reputed to be one of the greatest preachers that ever lived. They say Charles Spurgeon preached to 10,000 people every Sunday morning in England. And he was very well known, but they say that Queen Victoria never heard him one time. She didn't darken the door of the church. She'd never heard Charles Spurgeon preach. She's queen. Most kings and queens and presidents are not church-going people. They're thinking about other things. I know there was some controversy the other day about our president. He hadn't been to church in a long time, so he made it to church not long ago. But a lot of these people in high offices, they're not interested in church. They're not interested in spiritual matters. Queen Victoria never heard Charles Spurgeon preach, one of the greatest preachers, they say, that ever lived in England. But anyway, here's old Felix, married to this woman who is a little older, living up there, and here Paul, a gospel preacher, is incarcerated. And after certain days, it is said, in verse 24, Felix came with his wife Drusilla, which was a Jewish, he called for Paul and heard him concerning his faith in Jesus, or in Christ. Well, that's unusual. Paul is going to speak to the governor and his wife. Now, the next question is, what's he going to preach on? Well, the text tells us. And he reasoned on righteousness, temperance, or self-control, and judgment to come. Felix trembled. So one translation said he was afraid. He was a frightened man. I said, two frightened men. Now, the jailer obeyed the gospel. Felix didn't, but they were both frightened by different things. I think the jailer, the reason he was afraid was because he came very close to dying. And that was his wake-up call. I think in the case of Felix, Paul made the judgment and hell so vivid that it scared Felix, and he trembled. He was afraid. There was something about Paul's sermon that made him afraid. And I believe that. I believe Paul preached a hellfire sermon to him. Someone said, but Luke didn't record the whole sermon. It just mentioned an outline. I understand that. Now notice righteousness. When a man preaches on righteousness, what's he going to preach on? Well, he's going to preach how God makes us righteous. But how does he make us righteous? By the gospel, Romans 1:16. I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, unto every man that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek, for therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith. As it is written, the just shall live by faith. So where is the righteousness of God revealed? It's in the gospel. So what did Paul preach to Felix? He preached the gospel. He didn't he didn't, we might say, pat him on the back and play politics with him and with the hope that he'd let him out of jail. He didn't do that. He preached what Felix needed, and he needed a good gospel sermon. And so that's what Paul preached. And then he told him how to become a Christian and that he ought to become a Christian. And then the second point of his sermon is, after you become a Christian, you have to exercise self-control. If someone asked me, what is the essence of being a Christian? I'd say, well, I think the essence of Christianity is self-control. I don't think you can beat that, because that's what it's made up of. God gave man certain drives. You might call them desires. But after God gave man these desires, he said, now control them. He put his hand and said, control those desires. And that's what Christianity is. If we let those desires get out of control, then we live for the world and for the devil. But if you don't believe that, just read your Bible. Someone said, well, where did I get some of these desires? Oh, they're legitimate. They came from God, and they're not wrong in themselves. But when you cross over the divinely appointed boundaries God set up, it becomes sin. Therefore, God says, you Christians control, self-control. So he says, Felix, you've got to practice self-control. He says, you can't go down here to Amesia and find a pretty woman and just say, order her up like you'd order something out of Sears and Roebuck catalog. He says, you can't do that. Well, Felix says, if I see a pretty woman, I want her, I want her. I understand that. But he says, you've got to exercise self-control. See? And he's just telling it like it is. Then the last point was judgment to come. He says, now I want to tell you, Felix, if you don't straighten up, you're going to have to meet the Lord in judgment, and you're going to be unprepared, and you'll be cast into hell, and there's weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, and you're going to suffer through eternity if you don't get right with God. Felix trembled. Scared him. Someone says, do you think that's sincere? Oh, yes, I think it was. Someone says, well, then he obeyed the gospel, didn't he? No. He had his wake-up call, but he turned it down. Now, I want to close this lesson by telling you something about Felix. Did you notice in the latter part of this that he was deposed and Festus took his place? You know why? Because historians say that he got into trouble and had his governorship taken from him, and in just a short time he was dead. He died in his 20s. Now, you think about that. If he'd have just obeyed the gospel, he could have gone to heaven. He's in the grave, going to meet the Lord in judgment unprepared. That's why he trembled. That's why he was afraid. He heard a hellfire sermon. He didn't do anything about it. Someone said, but the jailer did. I said I was going to talk to you about two frightened men. One of them responded, now, what's your response? Do you obey a wake-up call and get right with God? You'd better. And that's why this is written in the Bible. If you're here today in subject, I hope you'll come believing, repenting, confessing, and being baptized for the remission of sins, which will induct you into the family of God. We're going to invite you to do that as together we stand and sing our invitation song.